The Big E Sports Show with host Elissa Walker-Campbell just got bigger. Featuring former defensive star and three-time national champion at Nebraska and NFL player Jason Peter. Jason Peter under the helmet. With Jason Peter on the Big E Sports Show with host Elissa Walker-Campbell.
Elissa Walker-Campbell taking you through the fastest hour in radio. We are locked and loaded, ready for our Under the Helmet college football segment this weekend, and we've got a number of hot topics to discuss. Joining us on the Western Company of Texas phone line is our source. He is our Big 12 insider, three-time national champion at Nebraska, Husker great, Jason Peter. Jason, it's great to have you on this weekend. Doing great. We're getting ready for the big trip, the big road trip next week. That's right. We are headed to Lincoln, Nebraska, as we are getting set, the Campbell family, for the big gala and celebrity golf tournament. Jason, this is the first year for this golf tournament. You've got to be really excited. I have to ask you, are you a little nervous too?
I am. There's a lot of anxiety building up here in the Peter household. And like I told you before, thank God for the wife once again, because she kind of keeps everything organized. Myself, I have a hard time doing that, but we're thrilled. We can't wait. It's October 14th and 15th, and it's the first one. Hopefully many more to come, but it's for a charity called Junior Achievement, which is, the way I always explain it, is kind of like a Future Business Leaders of America, and it teaches kids real world experiences and real world skills, business, everything, you name it. That's kind of what the objective is. But we're going to have a great party, live auction, silent auction on Thursday night, and we're going to follow that up with a great day of golfing on Friday. And the big concern, obviously, when you schedule this thing months and months back is the weather, and my AccuWeather forecast says 74 degrees and not a cloud in the sky, so it looks like it's gonna work out.
Well, Jason, you had talked about the Junior Achievement and what a wonderful cause this is and what you guys are raising money for, this organization for your youth. But go through really the list of special guests. I mean, Tom Osborne, Doc Sadler, and of course, Charlie McBride, a guy that's very dear to your heart.
Yeah, Charlie McBride was our defense coordinator for the years that I was there, and goes down in college football as one of the all-time greats. And he's going to be the featured speaker, and Tom Osborne is also going to swing out, and I'm sure he'll say a few words. But we've got a wide variety of so-called celebrities. Clayton Anderson, who is an astronaut, who is from the state of Nebraska, he'll be at the event. Trev Alberts, who's a former player here at Nebraska, now the athletic director at University of Nebraska Omaha. He'll be coming by. We've got Heisman Trophy winners, Mike Rozier, Neil Smith, who's an all-time great in the NFL. I kind of wanted to do a mixture of athletes. I didn't want just guys from my time. I wanted to mix it up a little bit. So Larry Jacobson, who was Nebraska's first major award winner, won the Outland Trophy back in the early 70s. Jeff Kinney, who was a great running back from Nebraska. And then, like I mentioned, the guys from my era, Zach Wieger, Grant Wistrom, Aaron Taylor, a couple Outland Trophy and Lombardi winners there. So, I'm thrilled. I can't wait for this thing to actually happen.
Jason Peter with us this weekend on the Big E Sports Show. We're going to go all around the Big 12 Conference, talk about a number of the schools. But I have to tell you, Thursday night, already Big 12 Conference play was underway, Kansas State and Nebraska. But, this is kind of the farewell tour for Nebraska as its final season in the Big 12 Conference. Kind of what is the pulse of the fans right now? I mean, are they kind of talking about, the Big 12, but also those Big 8 days? I mean, this was a long-standing rivalry, I guess. You think about even Kansas State, Nebraska. That was a series that had gone back to 1922.
Yeah, Nebraska would like to go out on top the last year in the Big 12. And I think as you look around the conference, I think there have been a lot of schools that have circled the Nebraska game and said, we're not going to let them go out on top. And Nebraska is kind of the poster boy, I think, for maybe why the conference is in shambles. I mean, you know, they're kind of putting this image out there that it's not and life will go on, but I do think the Big 12 probably has to go out and find some more members because they want to be a conference that is playing a conference championship game. I mean, everybody talks about the problems that the Big Ten had or the Pac-10 with not playing in a conference championship game, that you're not playing that last week of the season when the SEC is playing their championship game and the Big 12 was playing there. So right now, I think everyone's happy that they were able to keep the conference together, but I think when people look at the adversity that the conference has faced here in the last few months, I think Nebraska is that poster boy for the reason why. So a lot of people are putting that big bullseye on Nebraska's chest.
It's interesting that you talk about, we think about how close this conference was, Jason, to being dismantled and taken apart. I mean, I watched before the Oklahoma-Texas game last weekend. Here locally, they had an interview with the Big 12 Conference Commissioner, Dan Beebe, and, you know, they asked him that question. And, you know, 10 teams right now, are they, you know, are they satisfied with where they are at? I mean, do you predict that they will reach out and go back to 12 teams? Because when I listened to Commissioner Dan Beebe, he seemed pretty satisfied with just having the 10 and kind of having that round-robin approach.
Yeah, and you know, it looks like that's what they're going to do initially. But I think they will, like he said, have to reach out. I think the problem right now is that heading into this season with the conference already knowing that Nebraska's leaving and Colorado's leaving, I think a lot of people were thinking, well, we still have Oklahoma, we still have Texas, we still have some of, you know, A&M and Okie State, and we're still strong, because I think a lot of people thought the power schools of this conference are still staying. Well, right now, it looks like Nebraska actually is one of the power schools in the conference. Texas not having a great year this year. Oklahoma still undefeated, but, you know, kind of been up and down, up and down. You know, you do have some surprise team. I mean, Oklahoma State playing well, but Texas Tech, kind of same thing there, up and down. A&M kind of been a little bit of a disappointment. So I think there was a different vision when Nebraska and Colorado left in terms of what we have right here with us now. You know, we've talked about it before. There's always that topic of conference supremacy, and the Big 12 has always been one that said, hey, we're just as good as the SEC, if not better. Right now, I think if you were to rank conferences, I don't know if the Big 12 is even in the top three. You could make an easy case for the SEC, the Big 10, and the Pac-10.
Where do you think the Mountain West Conference falls in all of this? I know BYU is down this year, and of course TCU in that number five slot, but Air Force, let's not forget, a few weeks back, I mean, they gave Oklahoma a run for their money in Norman.
Yeah, I mean, there's some quality teams in that conference. You know, there'll always be the stigma that it's not one of the big power conferences, so no matter how well I think a group of those teams do, I think there'll always be that kind of asterisk next to their name as not being a power conference. And you know, I don't know how they get around it. I mean, I imagine that the Big 12 expands, they'll take a look at some of the schools there. You know, and it is somewhat of a domino effect. You know, some of the smaller conferences that seem to be doing well and strong, you know, they're going to be targets for some of these bigger conferences that are looking to expand. So it's a odd world out there, I think, in college football, and especially right now. I think it's kind of at a crossroads here because everybody is talking about going to these super conferences and being able to get these giant TV contracts. Well, usually it's the little guy who will suffer the most.
Jason Peter with us this weekend on the Big E Sports Show. You had mentioned Texas. Boy, who would have ever predicted coming into this season, the 2010 season, that they would be off to such a slow start and falling completely out of the polls the first time since 1998. I mean, there are all kinds of rumors swirling around here. People have hit the panic button. It's just amazing how the fans, I don't know whatever side you're on, they have short-term memory. I mean, let's not forget UT played for the national championship last year against Alabama. They're saying that Mac Brown could get forced out at the end of the season. What do you think?
If that happens, then I don't know. I don't know why I even stay in this business, this career in college football. If the guy who is constantly having his team in the top 10, constantly winning or playing for conference championships, national championships, if because of 1 year where he doesn't have his team ranked in the top 10 and he's going to get fired for it, then there truly is something wrong with this game. Now, I'm not the biggest Mac Brown fan. I do think that there should be more national championships in Austin than what he's been able to do. But the thing is, you know, there's almost two sides to every college football team, to their season, and one is the actual game season, and then the other one is the recruiting season. And when you talk about Texas and Mac Brown, I think the place that he dominates is in that off season, that recruiting season. Every single year he's bringing in the kids, and I think that is maybe what is frustrating for a lot of fans is them sitting back saying, look at all the guys we have. Look at all, you know, the talent that he's able to bring in. How come we're not winning national championships or at least playing for it every single year? And, you know, it's difficult. I mean, for people to think that, you know, you're able just to go out and get a bunch of high school kids that, you know, dominated their respective leagues. I mean, you're talking about a different world when you're playing college football compared to high school. You know, some kids succeed, some kids don't. Some kids have the right mentality, some kids don't. Some guys have reached their potential, their max in high school, and they end up never getting better when they get to college. So, you know, there's a lot of stuff that goes into making a national championship team. But, you know, overall, I think through the thick of it, I think Mac Brown has done a pretty good job.
Well, he really has, and I have to chime in on this. I mean, let's look at over the past 13 years, I mean, what he's been able to accomplish with that school. He has an impressive record, and as we had just talked about, you know, played for the national title championship, and of course in 2005 with Vince Young, they won it all. And let's not forget, they have a young quarterback. I mean, it is a process, Jason. I mean, you understand this as a former player. I mean, they had Colt McCoy last year. Of course, he gets injured and has gone on. But Garrett Gilbert, I mean, it's just going to take them some time to find some offensive rhythm. They're immediately looking for playmakers. What do you think about offensively? What do they need to do to get things going again?
Well, it's exactly what you said. I mean, they lost the all-time winningest quarterback in college football history with Colt McCoy. Do you think that's not going to take a little bit of time to get over? I mean, look at Florida and the pounding that they took to Alabama last week. I mean, you lose Tebow, and I knew right away. I mean, I think they had Florida ranked at S7, and Texas was right there as well, too. And you're thinking, gosh, I mean, they both have new quarterbacks starting for them. And it's not just any, you know, new quarterback. I mean, these quarterbacks are having to replace the legends there. And you never want to be the guy that has to replace the legend, whether you're talking about a player or you're talking about a coach. You know, you'd like to be that next guy that comes in, because the expectations that are laid upon you and what people are expecting out of you, they expect these guys to not miss a beat, and that, you know, Garrett Gilbert should step in right where Colt McCoy left off. And it's great, I guess, to think that way, but there's so much pressure on these kids already. I mean, they're not allowed to develop at their own pace. I mean, you know, with this whole other off season becoming an actual, you know, season, college football is year round now, and these kids, they never get a couple months to kind of just go into seclusion. Their front page on ESPN or Fox or whatever, you know, the website or television station, and you know, they're always under the microscope. So I could only imagine what they have to go through. But, you know, when you look at Texas, I mean, give the young quarterback some time. I do think that they probably got to look at that offensive line. I don't think it was great last year, and I think it's probably a little bit worse this year. And it's a little shocking that Texas can't go out and find five big, mean, nasty guys to put on that offensive line when you talk about, you know, the state of Texas that they get to pick from. But it seems to be the problem. And let's face it, I don't care who you have running the ball back there. If you don't have five guys up front who can move some guys off the ball on defense, then those running backs aren't going to do anything. And right now, I think that's probably the biggest problem.
If you're just joining us this weekend on the Big East Sports Show, you're listening to Jason Peter. He brings us our Under the Helmet college football segment every single week. And I tell you, you know, being down here in the Fort Worth area, you hear a lot of things in the media and kind of the buzz, but I just kind of sense, Jason, I don't know if you heard up in your part of the country, but it just seems like, you know, everyone's just trying to get Mac Brown out of the way so they can make room for coach in waiting, Will Muschamp. I mean, is this guy that fabulous?
Well, if you look at the UCLA game, not really. You know, look, he's a great defense coordinator. You know, for people to think that he's automatically going to be a great head coach, you're talking about two different jobs there. And it wouldn't be the first time that a guy failed making that transition, especially then when you talk about being in the state of Texas. To not go over exactly what I just talked about with the players, but the same goes with the coaches. I mean, yeah. The expectations. And fans always think the grass is greener on the other side. And sometimes it's a harsh reality when you find out that the guy who you thought was going to be better than the guy you had is not good at all. And then you start to go into this downward spiral and trying to find the next Mac Brown. And, you know, Nebraska went through it for years and years and years, and it's just finally now starting to come out of that hole that they had been in, kind of post-Tom Osborne. And, you know, I think even when you talked about Frank Solich, I mean, there was a lot of people that thought, oh, we got to be able to get somebody better in than that, right? I mean, going 10-3 isn't good enough. And, you know, I think if you polled most athletic directors out there and you asked them if 10-3 would be all right, I think most of them would probably say, yeah. I mean, we'd love to play for a national championship, but I'm not going to fire you for going 10-3. Well, he got fired for going 10-3, but, you know, it's hard to say that Muschamp's going to be a better head coach than what Mac Brown is, because there's so many other things that go into it than just coaching the X's and O's. And you know, there is, like I mentioned, the recruiting side. I don't know what type of recruiter Muschamp is, if he's even a guy who goes out and recruits. You know, nowadays, some of these guys that are getting paid the big bucks, they say, I'm just going to sit here on campus. Now, it's a unique situation with Texas, because it's not like they got to jump on planes and go out to California and go all the way up to New Jersey or Florida.
Right.
You can pretty much walk outside the football offices there in Austin and throw a rock, and you're probably going to hit five or six Division I athletes. So it is a different situation than most. But, yeah, I mean, I don't think he's going to be a bad coach, but you can't sit here and say he's going to be a great one at this point.
Okay, so Texas is reeling a bit. They have dropped their last two, of course, September 25th, UCLA, and then last weekend, Oklahoma at the Cotton Bowl. They have a bye this weekend, and then they will be headed to Lincoln, Nebraska next week, October 16th. Your guys' calendars circled for that. How do you expect their mindset will be coming in? I would anticipate they're going to be very hungry for a win.
Well, it's payback. It's kind of been the motto, I think, this whole offseason. They've had little bracelets made up, which I'm never thrilled about any time you have a football player wearing a bracelet. But it had, I think, .01 or .1 second on it. And obviously that is signifying the game there, the Big 12 championship game last year, where Colt McCoy threw the ball out of bounds and they put that .1 second back up on the clock. And they were able to pull out a victory there. And Nebraska felt like they got the short end of the stick and blah, 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 blah. I'm not going to be one that sits here and says, oh, poor Nebraska, because you had, you know, 75, 80, 90 other plays over the course of the game to win that game. You know, it shouldn't have come down to that last play. And whatever the case, ultimately you didn't get the job done. So But Nebraska, the fan base, everybody's excited for this because they thought they got cheated out of the game last year and that they should be Big 12 champions. So, you know, there was a video made, this read out around the world, and it was kind of done, I guess, without the head guy saying, yeah, go ahead and do it. But it did target Texas as the team for this read out around the world. And you know, when you're a big program like Nebraska or Texas or Oklahoma, you know, you don't do things like that. You don't circle one game on your schedule and say, this is it. This is the season. If we lose this, then everything is pointless. You're the school that other schools circle on their schedule. I mean, this is the thing that used to happen with us back in the 90s was people would circle us, and it's the same thing as what USC and Texas have gone through and Oklahoma have gone through over the last 8 to 10 years is people circle their name on the schedule. And, you know, it just kind of, for me, it put us back in that little guy's seat. You don't want to be in that little guy's seat. You want to be the big guy. You want to be the one where they circle your name. So I was happy when Bo said, no, that video's coming down, and you know, that's not the way that we do things here. I'm sure Coach Osborne had a little bit of say in that, but whatever the damage has been done in my eyes, and you did pinpoint this Texas game. So in a way, I do think it's kind of all or nothing here. I mean, Texas has had Nebraska's number for years and years and years. I mean, you go back to when I played in the 90s, the first Big 12 championship game. I mean, that was a Texas team that came in with four or five losses, and we were headed to play for a national championship, and they won. I think, you know, we maybe have beat them one time since then, and it's going to be a challenge because it's one of those games where it is somewhat of a rivalry game. I think with just what's been going on lately with all the controversy from last year, and whenever you play a game like that, you can pretty much throw the records out the window. You're going to get the best effort from both sides of the ball. So I'm looking forward to it. I think it's going to be a great game and a great challenge.
Well, Bo Pelini certainly will want his guys to come out from the start and just, you know, punch him in the mouth and play with a lot of emotion. But hypothetically, I don't like to get ahead of myself here, but gosh, if Texas should lose in Lincoln and have lost three straight, what do you think it's going to be like around here?
Ooh, I'll tell you what.
Can you even imagine?
I think people are going to be waiting for basketball season to start.
That's a good thing. Okay, well, let's shift avenues. We got to talk some Oklahoma. I know that you were kind of hoping that Texas would prevail last weekend so that when they would head up to Lincoln, Nebraska, that they would be bringing their A game. But how about those Sooners? I know that they kind of looked a little wobbly in the fourth quarter, but I thought Landry Jones and his boys looked pretty darn good in that first half.
They did. And you're right. For the first time, any other year, if it was Oklahoma, Texas, I would have been rooting for your Sooners. My priest Sooners that married the Buff and the Husker.
Oh, my husband dialed into the show last week, and he was absolutely, big smile on his face. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, so, but for this one, for my selfish reasons, I did want Texas coming in here without two losses, and unfortunately, it didn't happen. But you got to take your hat off to Bob Stoops and the Oklahoma team, because that's one of those games, like I just talked about. Whether Texas is down or Oklahoma's down, I mean that's the premier game in the Big 12. That was the game that they pinpointed the higher ups when they formed this conference that was going to be the marquee game of the year. And you know, whenever you're playing that game, you can expect drama. And you know, it was a well fought game from both sides. You know, like you said, Oklahoma jumped out and they looked great right out of the gate. And you know, I think there has been some inconsistency, not just in that game, but throughout the season. I think that's got to be the one thing that maybe concerns Bob Stoops. But whenever you're playing a game like that, you're happy to get out with a victory. I mean, truth be told, sure, you'd love to dominate all four quarters, but you're happy you get out of there with a victory, because it doesn't matter, like I said, what the record is of the guy on the other side of the ball. You're going to get everything they got. And like I said, anytime you can beat Texas and you're a Sooner, I'm sure you're pretty happy.
So, Jason, what do you think needs to happen that Oklahoma can play with more consistency? I mean, let's not forget they're 6th in the poll. You know, they're 5-0 right now, unblemished. They've got a bye this weekend. It comes at a perfect time. I personally love the layout of their schedule. But what needs to happen that they can play with consistency from start to finish, not get complacent?
I think it all starts up front. I mean, obviously, the quarterback is always going to be the guy who takes most of the blame. He'll be also the guy that gets most of the praise. But the truth is, everything starts up front. And, you know, the offensive line last year, that was a problem for Oklahoma. It was. And, you know, I don't think this is necessarily the greatest offensive line in Bob Stoops' tenure down there at Oklahoma. But I think you're starting to see games that were similar to last year. And last year they couldn't win those games, but this year they are. And that's obviously a step in the right direction. I think being able to keep DeMarco Murray healthy. I love watching that guy play. I've said it before on the show. I think he's a guy who's going to play for years and years and years on Sunday. And Landry Jones himself, too, is going to be a guy who plays on Sundays as well. I just think that everybody expects so much so fast out of some of these guys. You know, you're never going to be at your peak after the fourth or fifth game of the season. And, you know, I think part of the key or what a coach tries to do is to say, hey, even though we're not going to be at our peak after game 4 or 5, let's just at least try to make sure that we're undefeated, because then we'll just continue to grow and grow and grow. And let's face it, I mean, you lose one or two games, especially in a year like this for the Big 12, the chances of playing for a national championship are going to be slim and none, because it's just not that strong of a conference this year. So you have to be undefeated, I think, coming out of the Big 12 this year. I mean, Nebraska could actually end up playing 0 ranked teams by the time their season is over.
Unreal.
I mean, that's shocking to think, because Boise State, TCU, all of these schools are playing some ranked teams. Nebraska might actually play 0 ranked teams. And people are looking at that saying, you know, how can you criticize Boise, or how could you criticize TCU for what they have to play? Nebraska might not play any. And they're not wrong in saying that. I mean, that's college football, though. I don't think it's necessarily figured out, if that's clear enough.
Well, there's a lot of things that's difficult to figure out when you talk about college football, but I am curious. I wanted to ask you, you had just touched on something. DeMarco Murray, just an outstanding running back for the Sooners, a fifth-year senior. You're predicting that he will go on to the next level. He has had so many injuries in the past. How do you think that will affect him in terms of his stock with the NFL? What round do you think he'll go?
I think if he stays healthy for this year, I think you could be looking at a first-round draft pick. I don't necessarily think that the NFL will say, well, he was injured early on. I think they just want to know, how are you lately? How are you in this past year? Were you able to get through a full college season without missing any games? Now, if he ends up on the shelf for a game or two, then I think you are going to have some concerns. But, you know, it's right now, everything's going, I think, in his favor. And either way, if a team says, hey, we just think he's too banged up to be drafted in the first round, some guys have to take different paths to get to that big contract or to get to be the elite of the NFL. And for DeMarco, maybe, you know, that's I guess, his calling is that he's going to have to be a second or third round, or maybe not. Maybe he'll be the first, but I think sometimes those guys that come in with a third-round pick or a fourth-round pick, sometimes it's a little easier for them. The expectations aren't laid on them the same way as a first-rounder. They can really kind of just focus on playing football instead of having to play football, and then they got to deal with the media afterwards, and then they have to deal with all the criticism. Do you know what I mean? There's a lot that goes
right
into being a very high draft pick. And you see it all the time. As long as he gets his opportunity, that's the only thing that matters.
Jason Peter, you were a first-round draft pick, of course, were selected by the Carolina Panthers. Did you have neck injuries your senior year, or did all that take place when you were in Carolina?
I had some minor stingers when I was here in college, and I had some back spasms my senior year, never to the point where I missed any games. But the injuries just kind of started to mount up my first year down in Carolina, and my shoulders were coming out of the socket by the halfway point of my first season, and having those operated on afterwards, and then the neck, and it was a domino effect, and it was kind of up in that triangle area of my neck and shoulders. And there's that saying in the NFL that you can't make the club in the tub. And I think when you're going through those first few years in the NFL and you're trying to absorb as much knowledge from the veterans as possible, I think sometimes you do whatever you need to do to make sure that you're not one of those guys that's in the tub. You want a long career. Everybody wants a long career. So there were times, I think, when I look back and I say, geez, maybe if I stayed in the training room every day and got ice or got therapy on my shoulders or my neck, maybe it would have helped in the long run. I mean, there's no guarantee to say it would have, but your body is your business in that league. And unfortunately, some guys that are just nicked up too much, and they're still great football players, but it is about, it's a business. And you're getting paid a lot of money. And if you're not out on that field, teams are just not going to pay you that money. You're a commodity to them, and they need you out there. So, your health is the biggest thing when it comes to professional sports.
It is amazing as we get ready to wrap up our segment. You talk about the longevity in that sport and just the risk that is involved. My final question for you is, who do you admire the most, perhaps as a former defensive player that's now playing in the NFL?
Well, gosh, there's a lot of them. I mean, I think anytime you can get linemen that play over 10 years, over 12 years, 13 years. I mean, you look at kind of Bruce Matthews and what he did down with Houston and then in Tennessee, and I think he played like 20 years or something, and it's almost unheard of, because when you're a quarterback, I think, and you look at the hits that you take throughout your career, most of them, if not all of them, are just on Sunday. For most of the week, you're off limits. Nobody's allowed to touch you anyway. When you're a lineman, it's when you're practicing with full pads, it's like a game out there, and it's a physical, violent sport. And it's not just Sundays when you're getting those blows to the head, or you have big 300-plus offensive linemen that are down blocking you and hitting your shoulders or your knees. So anytime you see a lineman that's able to go for an extended period of time, I mean, Michael Strahan, who played for 13, 14 years, you got to just take your hat off. And I think a lot of it is they've got the grace of God on their side. I mean, I don't think you can do it just with sheer willpower and saying, I'm going to play 13, 14 years. You've got to have some luck in there, too, along the way. I think you've got to have somebody looking out for you when you end up playing that long, because not many guys are able to pull it off.
We certainly look forward to catching up with you next week in Lincoln, Nebraska. Look forward to meeting you and your beautiful family, and we'll talk to you again real soon.
Can't wait to see you.
We're going to step aside. Much more straight ahead this weekend on the Big East Sports Show. Stay close.